Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. The 28th annual Milwaukee LGBT Film and Video Festival opens this evening at the Oriental Theater. The opening night celebration includes a showing of the documentary I Am Divine about the life and career of the actor and performer Divine. The festival, sponsored by UW Milwaukee, features domestic movies, foreign ones, documentaries, comedies, and dramas over its four-day run. Festival director Carl Bogner spoke with Lake Effect's Dan Harmon about the festival, starting with opening night.
This year, to open the festival, we've invited a local personality, Karen Valentine, to serve as MC. She'll be presiding over our opening night screening. Karen Valentine, also known as Michael Johnson, is a wonderful friend of the festival, a great, I think, singular personality, but also has a singular relationship to film in terms of his incredible knowledge base and what delights him about cinema. He's also something of a showman. Opening night has been characteristically hosted by a rather dry-as-dust academic. So there's a sense that given what we're showing on opening night, it would only make sense to invite a personality who knows how to embrace the largeness of film, the largeness of life, as a way of introducing the screening.
Which, of course, and you alluded to it, is the reason for Karen Valentine's presence is I Am Divine, which is the opening night movie, which is, of course, about Divine.
And I don't mean to presume that everybody knows who Divine is or already cherishes Divine. It's been interesting to meet the topic of Divine with my students, who may seem as a more exotic creature, may not be understood as a necessary figure, which some of us, myself included, hold to. Necessary because I think Divine remains a shocking figure, someone who challenges a host of status quos, whether it be about gender or body type or taste. Divine is wonderfully uncontainable. The movie is wonderfully accessible. I mean, Divine's life could have deliberately and perhaps antically been given a tabloid kind of approach, given the excesses of John Waters and company. John Waters, the filmmaker, who was also something of a Svengali for Divine, ushering Divine into a film career in the midnight movies that they made together. But I watching Pink Flamingos or Female Trouble Now, Divine, I think, still has this incredible energy and this capacity to shock in a way that I don't think – maybe things can't be shocking like that anymore, or maybe people don't try. I would say there's something political and aesthetic about the shock, which is what I love about it.
And if you have seen Divine movies before, it's fun to get re-shocked, if you will, and see them again. There's nothing wrong with that. What I liked about this documentary is that – It fills in some gaps. I mean, for people that think they know a lot about Divine and Divine's life and career, and you don't, unless you're really, really well-versed. I mean, I didn't know about some of the early movies. I didn't know that, not Divine, but the actual actor behind Divine was going to be on Married with Children before he died. I had no idea.
What's great about the documentary is Jeffrey Schwartz's film really cherishes Divine as a performer, as a working artist. The film follows the trajectory of Divine's career. A lot of the movie is about his time outside of John Waters' films, the recording career, the stage career that Divine had. And it meant a great deal to Divine, Divine feeling like he was being recognized as an actor, as a performer, when towards what he didn't know was to be the end of his life, that he's being given parts where he would play male characters. In Alan Rudolph's film where he played a gangster, and then also, yes, he was supposed to start taping a recurring role on the sitcom Married with Children the day after he died.
Okay, and that's opening night. Now, I like the variety of movies that are available at this festival. One of them is about not just about the poet Elizabeth Bishop, but it's about her, mainly her life and the time she spent in Brazil. And then if you like history, I mean, the woman that she was living with was also an architect who designed some parks or a major park on the waterfront in Rio de Janeiro. So that wasn't a big part of the film, but it's just interesting to see how their lives were commingled for a while.
This film, Reaching for the Moon, by the Brazilian director Bruno Barreto, is about the American poet Elizabeth Bishop's sojourn in Brazil. She went for what she called a geographic cure. The movie sort of presents it as her trying to recover from perhaps a creative and personal malaise. And so she went to Brazil to visit an old college friend and ended up staying for 12 years and having a very passionate romance with her college friend's girlfriend at the time. Right. And you're right. One of the pleasures of it is it's a portrait of two working artists struggling to have a life together. And it's by a Brazilian director, so it very much presents the idea of this perhaps repressive Yankee who blossoms at once in the tropics of Brazil, both artistically and romantically.
I would recommend that anyone that sees that movie just do a quick Wikipedia, get some background on that era in Brazil. It might help you understand a little bit more. And also that night, there's the Adventures of James Broughton.
Yes, Big Joy, The Adventures of James Broughton, a documentary about this lifelong bohemian. The movie is very much a history of the San Francisco art scene. Broughton, an experimental filmmaker and poet who emerged as an artist after World War II, collaborating with pretty much everybody in the field of experimental film, dance, poetry, theater. And he seems most San Franciscan in the forms of his bohemianness, the whimsy and silliness of his films, the anticness of his poetry, his eventual status as something of a gay liberator, his delight in all things flesh and his sense of personal freedom.
You also have three shorts presentations. We won't talk about all these, but there will be an evening of men's shorts, women's shorts, and trans shorts.
Yeah, we have a very enterprising shorts committee that puts together some, I think, really dynamic and exciting collections of international short films that we'll be presenting each night at the Union Theater.
What is on Saturday, 11 a.m., is I Am Woman Now. Tell us about that one.
Oh, it might be the most beautiful film we're showing. It's a documentary about five trans women. They could be understood as the first generation of transsexuals, each of these women having gone to the same doctor in Casablanca for surgery to transition from men to women. And the movie interviews these women now in their 70s about how their lives were for the last five decades. They're all of different stripes, I would say, or some with great flamboyance and regalness, others with a determined, I'd call it ordinariness, in that it's as ordinary as you or I, in the terms of the way they lead their daily lives. They're a striking collection of really impressive figures, confident in their life choices, open about any sort of hardships or struggles that they faced. But they all have such bravado, I think, that they're great company. And the movie weaves together the five conversations with these European women from Northern Europe and also England, weaves together their conversations as they talk about their lives. And the cinematography is just gorgeous. I mean, this is a great movie to inhabit because the company of the women is so engaging, and it's beautiful to look at.
And right after that is a pretty interesting documentary called The New Black, about the passage of the Question 6 referendum in Maryland, which would be, I think at the time, it was the first time that gay marriage would be voted in or allowed via vote as opposed to a legislative process or a judicial process. So, but it really focuses on the African-American community and how crucial the vote was there.
Yeah, it was a historic achievement. The people of Maryland approved same-sex marriage. It's the first time it's happened. The election was a real game changer. And the movie uses that election last November in Maryland as a framing device to consider the ideas around LGBT identity within the African-American community, concentrating specifically on the African-American church or African-American churches and how pastors in those churches would work either for or against the referendum. The movie works to contain a lot of recent history within this context of exploring what happened in the Maryland election, charting, for instance, the changing attitudes of our president on same-sex marriage, looking at the defeat around Proposition 8 in California and how immediately when the rights of same-sex couples was lost in that election in California, how the African-American community was publicly discussed as the cause of that. So this movie sort of, in many ways, it took that on as a challenge to wonder if was that really the case? Is that what's happening in Maryland? Who are the people within the African American community who are working to address that? And the best thing about the movie is that the filmmaker Yoruba Riken had incredible access, and we're privy to a lot of really great conversations. Pastors who are fighting against same-sex marriage are frankly open with her, and we hear their discussions around same-sex marriage. The film goes into the kitchens and the homes of many community members who are having really detailed, thorny, thoroughgoing discussions about LGBT people. So it's just get the documentary just allows you to be privy to a community really grappling with this issue.
And also on Saturday, some foreign films, which I'm always intrigued. And I don't think I've while I was watching it, I don't think I've ever seen a film from Poland of any kind.
We're very fortunate to be able to present the film In the Name Of, about a priest who we learned probably entered the priesthood as a way to shield himself from his sexuality. And we meet him as he is in a new position. We learn that he has a history of having been moved around, but he is the sort of spiritual guide for something of a halfway house for these young men who have been in some sort of reform school and who are at this place in a rural village on their way out to the world. And the priest meets this sort of strange young man, strange because he's silent mostly, who lives in the area. And his desires for this person stir troubles that he thought he had control of. The fact that the movie supports or values this priest's struggle, I think, is a way of offering a portrait of this world in which this priest is dealing with his personal demons. The movie is both really, I think, a genuinely beautiful love story and also just a beautiful movie about someone claiming something about themselves. But also it's a really chilling portrait of repression. I mean, the world that we meet in this film is brutal, blunt, masculinist. The capacity for ugliness or violence to erupt can happen in any scene. And the movie suggests that this man's vulnerabilities, his sensitivities, his spirituality and his desires are the only sort of things that make sense in this really cold world. And where this movie posits that gayness can exist makes for a really chilling portrait of a very repressive society.
All right, well, let's move on to the last day, Sunday, and the 11 a.m. movie, Lesbiana, A Parallel Revolution. That's interesting.
I think the movie does merit an explanation point because it's so good, but I just want to clarify for the listeners that there isn't an explanation point after Lesbiana. It's something of a road movie. The Quebecois filmmaker traveling across Canada and the United States to visit with women for whom the 70s were a time of both sexually and politically coming out. She interviews women for whom the women's movement of the 70s, or as understood in the 70s, was a time of great self-actualization. Their coming out as a lesbian for them was also entering into a political movement. Many of these women who she interviews interested in and engaging in intentional communities where they could structure a world defined by feminist politics, structure a world that was structured by other women. And it at first what may seem like a conventional sort of serial interview movie or like one interview after another, I thought just grew with such great warmth. I mean, these women who she talks to are mostly in their 60s or 70s, and they have a very frank and varied and reflective response to their time in the 70s. One of the things I like best about this film was that it doesn't have a uniform assessment of the period, but everyone talks about it in such positive ways about how edifying and fulfilling it was. By saying that not everyone has the same assessment, we meet this one woman for whom what seemed like the form of spirituality that seemed to inflect a number of the women's activities that she was going to didn't really speak to her, and it allowed her to rediscover her Judaism. Or we meet an African-American woman for whom the lack of diversity in the intentional community that she considered engaging with suggested that her feminist pursuits may have to take a different route. So I just find, you know, I'm not unlike I'm a Woman Now that we talked about. We get to be in the company of really articulate people reflecting back on the risks they took in realizing themselves, and they do so, I think, with great insight, with real warmth, often great humor. Okay.
So I want to talk about the last movie, which is such a kind of a nice way to end, I guess. It's a movie from Taiwan, but I think you described it in the literature as sweet.
It is sweet, and I don't mean to be flip about the word sweet. Something that is very hard to do is to make a successfully light film. A film that is sweet, generally so, and funny, and able to deal with issues of the heart in not a dismissive or derisive way. And I think Arvin Chen, the director of this film, has made one of the most successful romantic comedies I've ever seen, in part because I think he has an attitude about romance as an available fantasy that we can all engage in. And the movie, which is primarily about this optometrist, a married man, married to a woman. They also have a son who, when he meets this very dapper airline steward who comes into his eyeglass shop, finds his world somewhat unmoored because of his desires for this man. And the movie presents his romantic befuddlement, as befuddlement, not as melodrama, and also presents it in the context of a number of characters who are similarly confused about their attractions and their desires. A number of characters, I should mention, gay and straight, within which our hero's understandings of what desires he feels like he can pursue are articulated. And the movie has a great sense of whimsy, a great sense of play. There's, I'd say, grace notes that inhabit the movie, where characters may suddenly levitate, a karaoke scene may turn into a full-blown musical number. Soap opera characters on TV emerge into people's living rooms to offer romantic counsel. And it's all done with such a light touch. I find it a really pleasurable film.
Well, Carl Bogner, thank you for coming back on Lake Effect.
Dan Harmon, I appreciate the chance to have this conversation about the films we're showing. So thanks a lot.
Carl Bogner is director of the Milwaukee LGBT Film and Video Festival, which runs tonight through Sunday at the Oriental and UWM Union Theaters. He spoke with Dan Harmon, and there is a link to more about the festival from wuwm.com/lakeeffect. That's Thursday's program. I'm Mitch Teich. Great to have you listening today, and I sure hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.